Hey, you got, ladies and gentlemen, all ready? All right. We're going to start with a 2-minute meditation just to get centered and be here. Let's do that. And then Brother Mike's going to say a prayer for us.
In the name of the Father, the Omnipotent One, the Master Healer and the Master Teacher, Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end of all, we beseech you this afternoon, Father God. We beseech you and we ask your presence here. We ask that you just stop by and touch someone this afternoon for a deeper understanding and a deeper awakening as to the power that you possess to change lives. Bless T and myself, Father God, as we go about your business. Agents for you. Truth as you speak through us, that we might do your will. These things we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Mike. My name's Tarek. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Typically when I do this, it's called a journey through the steps. But I do it in the perspective of the sponsor, not the experience of the step work. I was for the first four or five years of my recovery, I sponsored everyone the same way, line by line through the big book. And then I found it ineffective because there are some individuals that are shaking and baking and you just don't have the time. And then I began to pray. And I began to use intuition, God consciousness, sixth sense, to be given the direction to take someone through the work. Interestingly enough, it's one areas in my life that I never question what comes to me after prayer and meditation. Other areas in my life, I ask for guidance and direction, and I don't like what I get the first time. I call it sitting with it, right? So I'll sit with something for a few days, and sometimes it stays the same, other times it doesn't. But with sponsorship, for whatever reason, I trust whatever comes. And one of my greatest influences was a man named Don Pritz. He's passed away. I heard him make a comment, "Do you believe you can take someone through the 12 steps without using the big book?" I know a few years ago, I would have thought that was heresy. What do you mean take someone through the steps by using the big book? And he followed that up by saying, if you live the way of life described in the big book, you become the big book. And I've gotten to this place now where my intuition with some individuals will tell me, don't use the book with this person. Just go off experience. And so what I'm going to do, and we're just going to see where Spirit leads us. Spirit's doing what Spirit does anyway. So I want to share some of my best practices with all of you as I take someone through the steps. It always changes. I don't take any individual the same through the steps anymore. I've been blessed. I'm coming up on 10 years, and I'm not saying this from a place of egoism, but I've had the honor and pleasure of taking over 200 people through this process out of this big book. And some of these individuals that I've sponsored have become my sponsors. I'm not a sponsor that believes the teacher walks in front of the student at all times. I think we walk shoulder in shoulder in this journey. And there are two individuals that I've sponsored for a very long time that they sponsor me. They really do. I defer to them. They are my teachers. They are my guides. And there's, I don't want any of you to miss out on that experience. As I heard Mike say this years ago, and it immediately touched my heart, but Mike said, don't look up to me. You looking up to me is going to kill me. Look at me at eye level. And that really resonated with me. I want to read something. You know how God works. The thing I was reading last night. This is what I believe sponsorship truly is. This process of dying to live is represented by organic life. Inorganic matter becomes organic by dying to itself and living a higher life in the plant, and so can the plant be exalted into still higher life by dying unto itself and living in the animal. The whole course of evolution is an illustration of the principle of dying to live. Can the seeker easily give up the old organs in order to acquire new ones? Can he learn to surrender to the demand, die before you die, die inside your life and go on living? Advocates Rumi. His view of death as a prerequisite for birth, or rebirth in our case, encompasses the whole range of possibilities open to him who desires to live as a true human being. The soul of such a one knows no limits. In verses often quoted, I died as a mineral and became a plant. I died as plant and rose to animal. I died as animal and I was man. Why should I fear? When was I less by dying? Yet once more I shall die as a man, to soar with angels blessed. But even from angelhood I must pass on. All except God do perish. When I have sacrificed my angel soul and spirit, I shall become what no minds conceived. Oh, let me not exist, for non-existence proclaims in organ tones, to him we shall return. The soul and spirit ascends the ladder of evolution with the power of love. On every step it is reminded of the vast, free spaces of home where the beloved abides. The remembrance of the old, forgotten taste of the homeland, the real homeland, gives the soul the courage to die to the known and to leap into the unknown. The lament of separation then turns into a song of jubilation. And when we get these sponsees that come to us, newcomers, they're in the process of death. And our job is to help them die. The big book says that the process is simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. Destruction of self-centeredness. As sponsors, it is incumbent upon us to help the men and women that we sponsor through this process die. The depth of selfishness and self-centeredness. And for years, I thought the step work, my work with those first nine steps was my spiritual evolution. I don't believe that to be true. About 4 years ago, I heard a man say that the first nine steps are the prep work. So I'm a guy that works the steps on a regular basis, 1 through 9. It turns out I do it about once a year. And it was so self-centered for so many years. You know, I got into this message, some men that were very influential in Mike's life, Mark and Joe, and they're all about the work, the work, the work. And I go into the work and I'm focused on self as I go through the work. And then it hit me, this very important line in Bill's story. It says, if we addicts and alcoholics fail to perfect and enlarge our spiritual lives through work and self-sacrifice for others, we're not going to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. That sentence right there says to me that I grow spiritually. I even perfect my spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. And sponsorship requires sacrifice. One of the questions I ask people on a regular basis, what are you sacrificing right now? What are you sacrificing for your personal recovery? In that process, what I have had the blessing to experience is I've been able to touch, taste, smell, and see God. Every time I take someone through this process and I watch the transformation, I watch them die and I watch them become reborn. I witness the regenerative power of God in that process. And it wakes me up. There's a spiritual intoxication that takes place in that process. And if you haven't experienced it, I can sit up here and describe it all afternoon, but you're not quite going to get it. I'm hoping some of you have experienced that. And that's as addictive as any crack rock I ever hit. And it's become a craft. It's become an art form, taking people through the steps. There are different questions to ask at different points in the process. And, you know, I've surrendered myself to several individuals over the years to take me through the steps, Mike being one of them. And so I've gained experience, and now I can pull from different experiences because intuition and spirit is leading me down a certain path with this certain individual. I think one of the worst places for us as addicts and alcoholics to exist in is a place of uselessness, boredom, and our life has no meaning. Sponsorship, work, and self-sacrifice for others solves that problem. Like the book says, it becomes the bright spot of our lives. There's nothing like it. But we have to remember those individuals that are coming to us are in a death process, and we have to help them complete it. Because what happens is they're entering something that their mind is telling them, I'm going from the light to the dark. I have no idea what this land looks like, and I don't know if I'm willing to step off. I don't know if I have the faith to go from bridge to shore. I just do not know. And our job is to help them cross that bridge and die the death of self. And sometimes it puts us in positions where we have to tell the truth, regardless of how it's going to affect them. And so I just wanted to do that little introduction. That's the direction we're headed.
There's a dilemma. And the dilemma with the new guy or new woman that comes to see us is that they don't want to die. They don't want to die. If you're like me, you don't care how horrific your experience with heroin or cocaine or alcohol or methamphetamine or pills or whatever it is that chooses you. You've lost power of choice. You don't care how badly that's beat you down. You have an altered part of you that is not of God that says to you, we can't die. I'm going to find a way. That's why so many people that come to see us, they don't get it. They don't get it. And that becomes a revolving door. Because of that piece of them that says, we're not dying, we will find a way, and you fight. You fight. He was talking about being effective. When you do the work, you get to step 10, and it says, we've entered the world of the Spirit, The intent behind step 10 is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So individually, when people come to you and say, guide me, direct me, I want what you have, in essence, they don't want what I have. They don't know it, though. They want what they already have. They just need to get access to it. And the peace that's necessary is depth. We used to call it smashing the ego in step one. The annihilation of the ego. Very pertinent piece to becoming a recovered person. So there's a dilemma with the new guy that comes to see us. I used to be a stickler for vigilante attacks on newcomers. If you're a relapser, there's something wrong with you. And you're not right. And how dare you? And I never relapsed. And it was a lot. I relapsed from the age of 19 to the age of 37. Relapse is necessary for some people. It's very necessary. So there's a dilemma. The dilemma is that we don't want to die.
I have to say this real quick, that I feel very honored. I'm like a little kid in a candy store getting to sit up here with one of my heroes. I hope all of you discover heroes in this program. A lot of my heroes have come through CD, and then I've gotten to meet some of them and spend some time with them. I've gotten to become very close with this man. I think he's wonderful and amazing, and I'm honored to be sitting up here with you. You know, I don't know how they do it. Back where you guys and gals are from, do they say the newcomer is the most important person in the room?
Yeah.
You know they're lying, right? It's a half-truth. Let's assume for a second that the newcomer is the lifeblood of the program. Well, this lifeblood has to have a heart to pump through. And the heart is those of us that are active in the 12th step. That's the deal. Heart, blood has to have a heart to pump through. It completes our circle. It's not a linear process. You know? And so, as part of... I think our jobs as sponsors is we've discovered the endless, limitless power source, and let's equate it with water. And we're constantly going to the river, and we're bringing back these handfuls of water to give the newcomers in hopes that one day they're going to find the river. But it's our job to direct them to the river. You know, it's sometimes it's triage in the beginning, to be honest with you. And so in the beginning, it's
go ahead. Triage, I like that.
Yeah. Patch him up.
Surgery.
So, the circle and the triangle is one of the most impactful pieces of, you know, we can say art or literature or messages or metaphors, whatever it is, but that ancient spiritual symbol that's been around for so long, it's a guiding post. It's a guidepost. As I take guys to the sessions, when I check in with guys, we, you know, at least once a month, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to ask them to locate themselves using that circle and triangle. And we all get it. I'm sure many of you in this room understand the mind, body, and spirit. We take our mind to the recovery process. We carry our body into the unity we find in the fellowship that we crave. And then we feed our spirit through service, work, and self-sacrifice for others. But as addicts and alcoholics, we suffer from insanity. And insanity is not doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Insanity is lack of proportion and the ability to think straight. And I don't know about you, but I suffer from that in several areas of my life. It's gotten much better. It's gotten better over the years, but some of that lack of proportion and the ability to think straight has led to an immense struggle in a certain area, which in turn has refined my character in that area. In other areas, the problem still persists, because I have the illusion of value. I'm still getting something from that area, regardless of how much pain it's caused me, because it's still there. If you work those first 11 steps and you enter into a recovered state, you will have much more proportion and you will think clearly more often than you did before. So that mind going through the recovery process, specifically those first 11 steps, solves that problem. Another challenge we have as addicts and alcoholics is this idea that we're separate, that I don't belong. And if we look at our fellowship as a herd, it keeps us on the periphery of the herd where the wolf hangs out, our buddy. Our buddy hangs out, the addict that dwells deep inside of each one of us. And this addict that dwells deep down inside is never going to go away. The voice goes into remission, then it comes back. And because it can't use a mental obsession anymore, it's going to show up in different areas of your life, and it's going to start talking to you. And then it goes back into remission if you're active in the work. What I've learned is I'm going to learn how to live in constant companionship with my addict. I just know that he's always going to be there. Mr. Crack is right there on a regular basis for me. I'm a guy that suffers from the bedevilments more than a lot of people. And not everybody suffers from that page 52 to the same degree. We see them in the rooms. They don't have to do what Mike and I have to do. And I'm not saying you suffer from it a lot. I don't know. That's for you to tell these people. But I can tell you I do. So I have a sacredness in my struggle, though. My struggle sits me back down with God at the table over and over and over. But finding a home group and getting active in a home group, getting a job, showing up, developing an accountability network around you, and I'm not talking about just checking in and telling on yourself. I'm talking about the type of accountability that turns into spiritual aspirants on a spiritual path, having transparent dialogue about existence. Existence, for me, is a struggle. It truly is. And I need to compare notes with how other people, how are you living your struggles? That to me, the longer I stay clean and sober, plays such a vital piece in my personal recovery. And that creates the deepest, most meaningful unity in my life. Now, these individuals who I have this transparent dialogue with are members of my home groups. They've been active doing this work. They're also individuals who believe deeply in two sentences in our big book. Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer. Okay. And so we look for talking dogs and we look for three-headed monkeys. That's what we do. It makes this exciting, it makes it fun, and it makes it deep and meaningful. It has a lasting residual effect. And that, if you have that type of unity, which all starts at the home group level, that sense of separation, it'll go away. Your roots will go deeply into the soil. So when the winds of life start to blow, you ain't going to go anywhere, because your roots are deep. But it's more than just showing up at a meeting and saying, hey, I'm doing great. I got my Sunday, I dressed to kill tonight. I've got my perfume on. I've got my cologne on. I walk into a meeting. Someone says, hey, what's up? How you doing? Oh, I'm doing great. But deep down inside, you're dying. You've got to have that core group around you and have that transparent discourse about spirituality. And for me, spirituality and struggle go hand in hand. That's why I need God. And I hope that's a need that never goes away for me. You know, we talk a lot about all of my needs are met. I'm always going to need God, and I hope that never leaves me. And then we feed our spirit with what I talked about earlier, the purpose, the vitality of living. I get that through sponsorship. I've had these gentlemen, I've been blessed to sponsor a number of men that have stayed clean and sober for a while. There's one individual. Every time I lay eyes on this kid, my awareness is immediately drawn to the power of God. There's a line in the spiritual experience appendix that nobody rarely ever talks about. It says most of us believe that the essence, that's an important word, the essence of a spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than myself. Awareness of God. That translates, I need to think about it, God, as often as possible. Through sponsorship, there's a residual effect when you see those individuals that you've been sponsoring for a while. And this young man came to me at a treatment center meeting, wide open. The pain was oozing out of the pores in his skin. And that was 6 years ago. Today he's the CEO of a treatment center in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He started at the front desk at a gym called LA Fitness. And what I have seen God recreate in this young man's life puts me in a position where every time I lay eyes on him, I immediately see the regenerative power of God. It does not make any sense. The words I'm using don't do it justice. You know, we do this group every week, and there's a bunch of people spread out over the United States, and he's sitting there with his newborn son in the video conference, not missing our accountability group. And I'm witnessing this through a computer screen, and my awareness is just pulsating with God. That's the magic behind sponsorship.
So, to be effective as a sponsor, to be effective in doing what we do, there's a reality in the rooms, 12-step rooms. And the reality is that there's different types of fellowships. Somebody likes us because this is a great social club. Somebody's here this weekend, you're here to socialize. You're not here to get the meat of what we do. To get the essence of really, for me, why 12-step rooms were created by God. And this book and this process was created by God. I believe they were created for the dying and the desperate. This is literally the last house on the block for you. And what happens is that an awakening occurs. An awakening that alerts you to the fact of you're separated from that from which you came, the Creator. And it's a conscious effort on my part to stay separated. Why? Because I want to be God. I've lived my life, if you look at your experience, and you got to travel with me because I preface this with there's different types of fellowships. But the main fellowship here are for those that are separated from the Spirit of God. That I don't care what you do, how many conventions you go to, how many commitments you get, how many people you sponsor, how many times you go through the work, there becomes a need and a thirst to go deeper, to know God a little bit better, which in essence, you will never know Him entirely. But that needing of Him and that power that he represents is evident to you to live life. You've got to have it. So we get certain prompts that it's time to move. And for me, those prompts are page 18, first paragraph, 52, middle paragraph, to be devilment, and 151, last paragraph, to four horsemen. Anything that is going on in my life that disrupts this, not this, this, where I really live, in my spirit, it's an alert. Hopefully, that it's time to peel another layer of the onion. Now, an effective sponsor will know when you're in that place. So they begin to shoot stuff at you. Like, so how's that working for you, Mike? Or, if you ain't having fun with your defects, something is wrong. Little things that you drop on people to help them, if they've fallen asleep, wake back up. Because I get the gift to recover, right? And become a recovered alcoholic or a recovered addict, I don't get to stay in that place all the time. Why? Because life happens all around me 24/7. I have a buddy. I call him my buddy because he was my buddy at one time. Me and Heron was close, man. Heron did for me what I couldn't do for myself. It helped me breathe on a daily basis. It loved me when nobody else would love me. When everybody else had thrown me away, Heron said, I'm here. Don't worry about it. We'll be okay. So he's been my buddy for a number of years, and we hung out on a daily basis. The difference today is that I'm just not willing to hang out with you no more. You know that buddy that you had that he began to do some things for you, to you, and you knew, I got to cut this dude loose, man. You know, we've had our time. Anybody heard of Barry White? Yeah. Barry White had a song out called We've Had Our Day. And it's time to go. So I need to, as a person that's become aligned with what we do, right? What we do here is help others. That's the core of our program. We help others. I moved from the selfish, self-centered stance that I came here with to the selfless service stance of being here for you. T talked about it a little bit. So why you do work again? So I can be more effective for you. So I can emulate God more for you, so I can help you breathe another breath in recovery and being a recovered person for you. And as a result of that transformation, something automatically happens to my life. And he said it, I can't explain it. I can sort of put it in words, but the words don't do it justice, man. Don't do it justice. I think I might talk about that a little bit tonight. I never know what I'm going to talk about when I speak, but don't do it justice what happens here. Words limited. So my deal is exactly what we're focused this workshop in is, how can I help you die? How can I help you smash your ego? See, because my smashing it don't do no good. My telling you you're an addict or alcoholic or you're powerless or your life is unmanageable don't do you no good. You have to experience that. Experience it. Not just read it off the wall or read it in the book. You have to experience it in your life, or you're not going to have the thirst and the desperation to forge forward. You're not going to have it. You'll still be anchored in an idea that there's something that you can do. Well, you might be able to do that something for a minute, but can you sustain that? That solution that you apply to the problems of your life, is it a forever, eternity solution? I have one now. I've never had one before now. Never. Heron failed me. He cut me loose.
You know, I've had I've been blessed. You know, I mentioned that number of 200 people. Half of that's come because I've taken groups of people through the steps. But within those groups, I'm always fascinated by the people that do not have the fortitude to push on through. They just are unwilling to walk, to live in that separated state, and they fall victim to the delusion that the drugs and the alcohol will make them feel some type of completion when it's an illusion.
Wait, can I just add this? Somebody in here this afternoon, you're in that exact place. You're in that exact place. It's time for you to push forward, and you're like, fuck that. I'm fine where I'm at. No, I don't want no more of that shit. That spiritual shit. Somebody in here this afternoon, right now, if you're honest with yourself and you're honest with us, you're in that place.
You're bleeding. And you don't have to bleed anymore. You know, we always think we have to reinvent the wheel. Okay, not we. I've seen people think that they have to reinvent the wheel, but here's the reality of it. If you find someone that exhibits what you believe is excellence, all you got to do is walk up to them and ask them what they do. And then you, in turn, do what they do. That's it. That's a simple, the simplest way I can frame it for you in what we do here. So, that circle and triangle, that is my location device. That's my GPS for this process. Recovery, unity, and service solves the insanity, gives you unity on a level. If we go deep, roots go deep, winds of life blow, you're not going to go anywhere. And then that amazing jewel in our program, which we call sponsorship. Now, when I'm taking a guy through, and I'm not taking him through line by line, I am going to touch a few things in that forward to the first edition. Specifically, this idea about recovered versus recovering. I would be okay with people that call themselves recovering if they only followed it by, I'll always be recovering from the spiritual malady or the internal condition. I'd be absolutely okay with it. But the reality of my experience is I don't suffer from the mental and the physical aspects of addiction and alcoholism. I'll get people that come back at me and they say, well, 99% of the humans walking on this planet suffer from a spiritual malady. Absolutely. It's still part of our problem because our spiritual malady, which is just conscious separation from God. Now, that the bedevilments on page 52, I don't call those the spiritual malady. Those are manifestations of what happens to us when we are shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, consciously separated from our Creator. That's how we live life. And so they say that because 99% of the individuals on the planet have that, that it can't be part of an alcoholic or a drug addict's problem. Well, our big book on page 64 believes in a three-part problem. All day long, the authors believe it. We're not only bodily and mentally ill, we're spiritually sick. Once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I did okay in math. That's three. That's three things. It is part of our problem. And that's what demands ongoing treatment. Now, here's the deal.
They also have early AA literature that confirms and talks about threefold disease by the old timers that started our program. Threefold. Get a book called The Good Book versus the Big Book. And read some of it. Threefold.
It's a good book. I listened to Mike read out of it last weekend. Listen carefully to what I'm about to say. So, the liar, each one of us in here, right now, right this very moment, has a voice that's lying to you. It's always going. Sometimes it's really low. I call it going into remission. The longer, in early recovery, when that voice is smashed and goes into remission, they call it the pink cloud. All right? And so, here's the deal. For every single person sitting in this room, the amount of time between your last drink and drug, and if you've experienced some type of ego smashing or ego deflation or surrender, and the time that that voice returns, that's how much time you got to work the steps. That's what I tell a newcomer. The voice of the liar is going to reassert itself on the scene, I promise you. It's coming for each one of us. The more we think about God and the more God dwells in our consciousness, that's our defense. It's the only defense I have found in 10 years. And so, not everyone that goes to these meetings suffers from page 52 or the conscious separation of God to the same degree. So, I have to stick with my tribe. And I'm going to tell you guys why I stick with my tribe. Because my liar is so cunning, so baffling, and so powerful that he'll convince me that I can do what Joe over here is doing. Because Joe didn't make all of his amends. Joe has a shoddy-ass network. Joe only meditates when it's convenient, and he sure as hell only sponsors when it's convenient. But Joe's my boy. And then I start to suffer. I don't have an accountability network. And the voice says, it works for Joe. Go do what Joe does. And I can't do what Joe does. Okay? And so what I'm going to tie this to is the chapter to the wives. Chapter to the wives. I love the lost chapters. Some of the most profound writings in our big book are in those last chapters. Specifically the chapter to the employers, because it's better than working with others when it comes to questions to ask sponsees. It's absolutely amazing. But in the chapter to the wives, they lay out four drinkers. First guy's pretty bad. Second guy's a little bit worse. Third guy's worse. And then the fourth guy, where I fall, is really bad. So my consideration to a newcomer is like, if you're type four, you gotta attack recovery in these 12 steps the same way you shot dope and smoked crack and drank whiskey. There cannot be a middle of the road for you. You're a type four. So sometimes, and I got this. This came to me from one of the guys I've sponsored for a while. He told me about doing that with a sponsee. He goes, when I sit down with sponsees, the first thing we do is read chapter two wise, and we read the four types of drinkers so we find out who we're dealing with. I was like, no shit. And I thought that was amazing. But see, there's type one, type twos, type threes, and type fours in our rooms. And so the ones that are like the type ones and type twos, I don't spend a lot of time nurturing and cultivating those relationships with those individuals. Not that I have anything against them. But my tribe is the type threes and type fours. I got to stick close specifically to type fours because that's my immediate family. The rest of them are my kissing cousins. All right? That's what I learned. That's what I learned from this guy. That's it. And I know you got to know who your tribe is. Or that voice of the liars will come back and tell you, man, they go to church on Sunday. They go to one or two meetings during the week. And that works for them, maybe it'll work for you.
Back in the day, we called it finding your truth. What are you? Are you a real one or not? Because if you're not a real one, you can just hang out with us. you can hang out with us, you can get a list of phone numbers and stick it in your back pocket, and when life shows up and you're all twisted and mangled and fucked up, call somebody. Call somebody and they'll give you a couple words and they'll straighten you out and you'll be fine. But then there's a guy that comes to see us. I don't care what he does outwardly. It never heals what's happening inwardly. Coupled with the fact of once he takes one, he can't control the amount he takes, coupled with the fact of whenever he gets distance between him and that what chooses him, he always goes back to that under the auspices of a lie. And the lie could be a number of things. So it was impressed upon me very early in my recovery, what's your truth? What are you? Alcoholic or addict or alcoholic addict. And I found my truth very young in my recovery, and it settled me. It gave me an answer to that question that I asked myself, numerous times that I'm pretty sure a number of you in here this afternoon, you've asked yourself also, what the fuck is wrong with me? You mean I'm doing it again? I said I wasn't going to do it again. And here I am back at the bar, back in the crack house, back with a spike in my neck or my toe. There's a difference in the rooms. There's a difference that needs to be known. Because it's about a solidification of the foundation that's being built in the first step, connected to the allergy and the obsession, compounded with spiritual separation. Spiritual malady, as the book says. Friedman. Friedman. When I did some work, an in-depth piece of work, T said it, you take pieces of this book and you turn them into questions and you turn them into spiritual exercises and you work with people to get them to acknowledge once and for all, I got a problem. I got a real problem. If something don't happen here, I'm going to die. That don't mean 6 feet under. That means sitting in this workshop this afternoon and you're dying. Sitting in this workshop, dollar to a donut. I've been doing this too long. I know somebody in here tonight, this afternoon, you're dying. And you ain't told nobody. You're suffering alone. First of all, you're suffering. When suffering is optional, you've made a choice to do that. Ain't nobody doing shit to you. And it's the world and everybody else's fault. We're taking a journey through the steps. We're taking a journey through wakening up and staying awake. Staying awake.
I'm going to backtrack 1 second. So in early recovery, if someone walked up to me at a meeting and said, will you be my sponsor? Yes. First word that flew out of my mouth. Next thing I know, I'm sponsoring 7-8 guys at a time. That's not sustainable. So over the years, I've come up with different ways. For a while, if a guy was in treatment and had no job, he had to read the first 164 pages before I'd work with him and give me a little book report. I want to see how willing he is, right? Like, you know, the book says after he's read the volume, the book says it. The people in the room said I made it up. They're like, that's not conference approved. I'm like, it's in the book. And then I started doing this, and this is what I'm going to suggest. If you work to perfect and enlarge your spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, you're going to receive some gifts. Everything that I have, every personal and professional success I've had in my life is directly connected to the amount of time I have sacrificed. Because the best definition of spirituality, enlightened self-interest. The best way for Tarek to get his is to make sure every single person gets theirs first. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's a lie. But if it is a lie, it makes me a better human. That's good enough for me. And so a guy walks up to me and says, will you sponsor me? I said, okay, do you have time to grab a cup of coffee? Or can I take you to lunch? Okay. First, I want to see if he's going to be willing enough to even pick up the phone so we can schedule this. Or sometimes I'll schedule it right there. So I go grab coffee with this person. The first thing I want to do is exactly what Mike said. I need to find out what their truth is. What am I dealing with? Because look, I speak crackhead language. Okay, I did my fair share of heroin and opiates, but I just do not get the heroin addict. I just don't. On some level, I just can't. Right? I got dope sick a few times. I fucking drank enough whiskey and cocaine and ate enough Valium. I didn't give a shit, right? I only turned into seek and destroy mode for cocaine. I qualify as alcoholic, and I'll talk about that tomorrow when I talk, but when the big book says pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, only one substance did that. That's my truth. I love working with crackheads. I can generally win the entire confidence of a crackhead in 5 minutes. It takes me a lot longer to win the confidence of a heroin addict. Meth addicts, probably 15 minutes. And alcoholics, even longer. But I've sponsored enough alcoholics and heroin addicts, when they come to me, I'm going to hand them off if I can. Unless the spirit just touches me and, no, you're supposed to work with this one, which has happened. It increases the chance of success. Heroin addict working with a heroin addict. You guys, you just get it. Same thing with cocaine addicts and alcoholics. I'm not saying an alcoholic can't sponsor a drug addict. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the chance of success goes up. When you have two individuals sitting down with the same experience. And so when I take them to get a cup of coffee, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to discover their truth, qualify them, and then I'd share some of my story so we can identify. And then I go to page 96 in the big book. It's 94 and 96, and this is exactly what I do. I'll outline the program of action, explaining how I made a self-appraisal, how I straightened out my past, and why I'm endeavoring now to be helpful to this individual. It's important for the individual to realize that my attempt to pass this on to them plays a vital part in my own recovery. Actually, it's helping me more than it's helping them. And I go through a narrative of working the steps. If I'm your sponsor, here's the deal. You're going to call me every day. I don't care if I pick up the phone or not. And you're going to leave a voicemail. I never used to make guys call me. I've been doing that now for a few years. It's a way I measure willingness. I've had these two guys I've recently taken through the steps. Each one of them called me at the same time every day for 6 months, give or take. And they're both on fire with this program. Do I think calling someone every day is going to keep you sober? Absolutely not. Is it going to demonstrate a degree of willingness? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I go through the narrative of the steps. If you're going to meet with me, it's going to be before my home group Monday or Thursday night. Groups at 8 o'clock. You meet me at the church at 5:30. That's your window. And I don't change the window. If Joe has Mondays at 5:30, Joe's always on Monday at 5:30. And nothing changes that appointment, barring some unforeseen circumstances. That's his slot. It's easy to schedule. We're good. Another guy gets a set Thursday slot. And then on the weekends, if I meet with a guy on a weekend, I'm going to make it very uncomfortable for him to meet with me, which means it's going to be early in the morning on Saturday or Sunday. Okay? That's the way I roll. And I'm going to explain all this to him, and I'm going to give him a few phone numbers and say, look, these guys are now in your accountability network. All you got to do is dial the phone and call them. They know exactly why you're calling. They'll take it from there. And then I say, okay, I want you to think about this. Okay, today, it's Saturday at 2:30. I want you to call me Monday afternoon at 2:30 and tell me you're ready to go through with the program of action as outlined in the big book. For 10 people I do that with, half of them don't call. I just saved myself an extraordinary amount of waste of time. That simple exercise will weed out a lot of people. I'm telling you, as you get the gifts of recovery, you get the family, you get the job, you get all the extracurricular stuff. You've got to find a way to weed through it all. I know in early recovery, you're just excited someone's asking you to sponsor them. I get it. Again, what I'm doing is I'm sharing my best practices with you, and what you do with them after that's what you do with them. And so after I go through that one section on we will be recovered, but we will always be recovering from the broken internal condition, which we cannot remedy on our own power. That's why we have to have a relationship with God. I'll ask them a question. And I consider myself a pseudo-historian of Alcoholics Anonymous because I am just fascinated by it. So I've collected a lot and I've read a lot. And so especially with people that are chronic relapsers. I don't know if I like that term after what you said earlier. which step do you believe the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was founded on? What step do you guys think it was founded on?
Step three.
Step three.
Step one.
12.
12.
I'm going to tell you all a story. So we all know Bill. He's at the Mayflower Hotel. He starts calling numbers, ends up meeting with Dr. Bob. Him and Bob talk forever. And then Bill moves in with Bob. And they hang out for about 2 weeks, and Bob's like, look, I love these six steps that the Oxford groups have, but this thing here called restitution to those harmed, I'm just not willing to do that. I'll do everything else, but I'm not going to go ruin my what's left of my reputation as a doctor in this town by going and making all these amends. And he goes off to Atlantic City to go to the medical convention, and he's drunk on his way there. He comes back, ends up at his office manager's house. Bill and Ann have to go collect Bob. They bring him back. He's got surgery on Tuesday or Wednesday. It's the weekend. They nurse him back to health. In the morning of the surgery, Bob wakes up, and I think at this time him and Bill are actually sleeping in separate beds but in the same bedroom, and he turns to Bill and says, Bill, I'm going through with it all. And Bill thought he was talking about the surgery. So he went to the hospital. Surgery was in the morning. Afternoon comes and goes, no Dr. Bob. Early evening hours come and go, no Dr. Bob. About 11 o'clock at night, Dr. Bob strolls back in, and Ann and Bill are just convinced he's out drunk again. They're like, where have you been, Bob? He said, I've been driving around Akron setting up all my amends. So all of us sit here this afternoon because Dr. Bob Smith became willing to make all his amends. Step eight. I tell this story because I start telling them about amends and how important it is. Because, I mean, think about it. How many meetings do you go to where the topic is making amends? Mm-hmm. And making all your amends.
Yeah.
Why? Because nobody makes them.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I got a saying that I use, and probably heard somebody else say it. You know, we thieves, right? We hear shit and we steal it. And try to make it ours, right? So I probably heard it somewhere that step nine is the ultimate surrender. And you just, I've never heard that story before, and you sharing that story, I can see where that phrase came from. Step nine in completion of amends is the ultimate surrender. You know, thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
Before I go any further, it's an honor to sit here with you, too. Couple different deals, you know, and hopefully you as recovered or recovering people, when you start sponsoring people and carrying the message, you'll find your niche. You'll find out what worked for you and what don't work for you. And I've sort of found my niche. I don't turn anybody down that comes to me and asks me to work with them or sponsor them. And I do that because the majority of people that come to me and ask me, they ain't serious any goddamn way. They just do it because they like what was shared in that meeting or what they heard in that meeting, or they heard as a result of me speaking from the podium, and they got a fire lit. And they have an awareness of something needs to happen, but when they walk out of that door, that fire dissipates and they're not willing. So anybody that comes to me, I tell them, sure, I'll work with you, call me. And I give them my number. Again, half of them that get my number don't ever call.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave myself open and available to whoever in the moment has an inkling that they need help. Why? Because that's my responsibility as a recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous. As a result of a spiritual awakening, I carry this message. So I don't get a choice as to who I carry it to. The only choice I have is that I must stay available, and I do. I work with people in different manners, depending on who you are, how much time you got, relapser, in the work, having completed it, depends on where you're at in your life, period. And then with the 12-step process. I might start you with the unmanageability. I might start you with two exercises, Bill's story 9 through 16, 58, middle paragraph 59, all the steps with two questions. Is this what you want to do, and are you willing to go to any lengths? And 76, third, last sentence of third paragraph, remember, it was agreed in the beginning that you would go to any lengths for victory over drugs and alcohol. With those two exercises, spiritual in nature, they are to involve the altered ego in the process when it shows up and says, we don't have to do this today. We don't have to go to a meeting. I don't have to write inventory. I don't have to set up an amends or make an amends in the ninth step. I don't have to accept the speaking engagement. That part of me where my buddy hangs out, that puts me in the no mode. I don't have that privilege or that luxury anymore. For me, it's an ordination. Completion of the 12 steps is an ordination. It's a crowning. I become an agent. Third step talks about it. Become an agent. God is my boss. So he sends them. I don't have an option. This is just me. I might have you read the first 164 pages of the big book. See if you're willing to do it. Might tell you read it. Might tell you read it in 3 days. Might tell you read it in a week. Depends on who you are. Might take you through line for line, word for word, page for page, chapter by chapter. Might meet with you every week, might hook up with you on Skype. But in each of those instances, before I do anything, I go to God and I say, who would you have me be in this person's life? And give me the direction that I need to be instrumental in helping to create change of body, mind, and spirit for this individual. And I wait. And the answer comes. And I give you what's given to me to give to you. Aligned with the 12-step process. I've done the work without the big book at all. I've done the work in specific areas of my life. But I've done the work. So I sort of feel like I'm speaking already. So I've grown to a place to know that I can't do the work. Oops. The work has got to do me. So what does that mean, Mike? That means I must have an experience with every step. With every step. No drugs, no alcohol to get to a place to see that. In essence, I'll get loaded again, I'll drink again, but this ain't about drinking and using. This is about how now do I live without my buddy? And to become effective at that, what? Living life on a daily basis. So there's a number of things that I use. The steps being one, and the experience of each step. First step, I need to experience my powerlessness. I don't care how long you stay around. You need to experience powerlessness. That you can't fix yourself. Again, 18, 52, 151 puts me in a place to experience that. That I'm powerless. Being powerless means I need power. So for me, 12 steps, the 12 steps are a journey for the acquisition of power, to get power in my life to live. Why? Because in step one, I see I don't have none. Can't fix personal relationships, can't fix my emotional nature, can't fix misery, can't fix depression. Oh, by the way, depression is a spiritual illness.
Does that mean it has a spiritual solution?
Exactly. That probably God can fix it. Been there, done that. Twice in recovery.
Oh.
So it's stuff that the longer you stay and the more you do this, or the more you allow this to do you, you get anchored into really what we do here. And I'm talking to a particular person, a particular individual that comes to see us. I'm not talking to all y'all. Some of y'all don't have to do none of this we're talking about. And you'll stay clean. You won't ever pick up again. You'll become a service junkie and you'll be fine. You'll just frolic through the goddamn tulips.
You went there, didn't you?
Fine. But a dollar to a donut, there's somebody in here that you probably need to do what we do in the nucleus of this program. You probably need to find God, and I say probably because that's your decision to make. It's not mine. We just give you, we just seed you with some stuff. So some of the stuff me and T is saying, it's going to set on somebody's spirit, and they ain't going to act on it until 6 months from now or a year from now. You remember something he said or something I said. And that's all we're here to do. Then somebody in here, you'll walk out of here and the light bulb is on. I'm dying. And you've said since you've been around us, I don't want no sponsor. I don't want nobody telling me what the fuck to do. Don't they know who I am? And you'll walk out of here and say, I got to get a sponsor. I got to get a sponsor today. I got to do some work today. Because of the click. We're here to click on a spiritual level, more so than any other level. Spiritual, like spirits connect. That's the light, that's the heartbeat of this program, spirit. For me. I don't know what it is for you, but I've grown to know that I live because of spirit and because of God showing up and revealing himself. T said it. I can feel him. I can touch him. I can see him. I can taste him. And it's better than anything else that's ever happened in my life. And I ain't going nowhere. I'm in another piece of work now for the umpteenth time. I remember I had gotten a couple pieces of work and the thought entered my mind, God damn, I'm going to have to do this for the rest of my life? And the answer came, yeah. You're going to have to be accountable for the rest of your life. You're going to have to be transparent for the rest of your life. You're going to have to let some people see you totally for the rest of your life. Hiding in secrets are what kills you. Oops. There's somebody else in here this afternoon. You got some secrets. You ain't told nobody. Take a break.
Yeah, let's take a, it's 2:45. You guys want to come back at 3?
Yeah.
3?